Welcome to Springwood, Ohio, the home of Sir Freddy Krueger. He was knighted. Look it up. I am here.
I wasn't prepared for that.
This is Welcome to Prime Time, the podcast all about the often maligned and forgotten Nightmare on Elm Street TV series.
That is true.
I'm Henrik Kuto, here with Double D David DeNoyer.
Hello, hello.
And we have quite a show for you today.
That we do.
We're going to be talking about episode 10 of the first season.
Yes, episode 10. So season 1, episode 11.
Episode 11. Oh,
dude. Dude Dreams Bleed.
Dude, oh yeah.
Now,
what a title.
I will admit that, last week I did not do my homework. And
no, you didn't.
We forgot that this, episode was coming.
Where's the we in this?
So, once again, season 1, episode 11, Do Dreams Bleed is today's topic, and oh boy, what a topic.
Now, before we get into that, Dave, I found something. Well, I didn't. My buddy Derek sent me this.
Oh.
And I don't know if this will work.
Let's find out.
Because I wanted to surprise you live.
Oh, God.
So the way Dave and I do this show, oh, by the way, if you want to watch what we're talking about, you can go to TubiTV.com or to the Tubi app on your Roku or Fire Stick. They have the entire run of Freddy's Nightmares as of the recording of this, free with commercials.
Yes.
So I try to remember to mention that every episode, just in case people are like,
but we're going
to
watch it.
Why are you making them sound like idiots? It's like, this is Dave. I like your guys' show. I'm a piece of shit. That's Dave.
That's not me. That's Henrik's impression of me.
That's your impression of the people who like our program.
Well, now we're just getting into Inception territory. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, my buddy Derek Smith brought something to my attention on Twitter, and I think the audio will be very entertaining.
Oh, man.
Oh, let me try one more time. Sorry. This is my first time hooking the iPad up to the old... Oh, there we go. There's a volume button.
There we go.
Shut up, Dave.
KPDX Fox 49 and Award Video give you the chance to bring Freddy home for the holidays.
Oh,
a Nightmare on Elm Street 4, the Dream Master from Media Home Entertainment, will be available in December, and 50 lucky winners will celebrate with Freddy's complete party kit.
What?
Including the new video, hats, posters, and sharp things.
There was a Freddy party hat and a Freddy invitation.
Freddy's Nightmares.
This is from Washington.
Oh, man.
Postcard, then mail or drop it by any Award Video. You might win the contest of your dreams.
That is so cool.
You win a Freddy, apparently you'd win, and I love this show is all about the lost and forgotten Freddy content.
That party hat, though.
Yeah. So apparently, not only has this gone viral recently again, my buddy Derek showed it to me, but apparently some winners have come forward and talked about how, like, one guy was like, I was so psyched when I won, and then my dad was so mad because we had to drive a half an hour to go get the prize. But somebody pointed out that I guess one of the invitations that has Freddy on it was like went up on eBay. Somebody put it up there, and it's just like printed on a home printer.
Oh my
from like
God.
1988 or 89. So they were running that ad on Freddy's Nightmares.
Oh, that's so cool.
It had a Freddy party hat.
I want the party hat so bad.
And you got a copy of part 4.
That is pretty awesome.
So I just had to share that with everybody.
Oh, thank you, Derek, for sharing that. That's awesome.
And Derek Smith, he's a good dude, and we appreciate you. So because of our, well, especially my busy schedule, no offense, David.
Yeah.
I mean, your life is like you have a job and you have cats.
Yeah. The job, cats, and that's about it.
Yeah. So
I exist.
Yeah. Well, let's not go overboard. But so I like to surprise you on the show because I have no time for prep.
I get that.
Now we're going on to season 1, episode 11, Do Dreams Bleed? Of Freddy's Nightmares.
That it is. So season 1, episode 11, Do Dreams Bleed? Original air date was January 8th or January 9th, depending if you go by IMDb or Wikipedia.
Or King James version.
1989. Directed by Dwight H. Little. And if you're wondering why that name sounds familiar...
Because he was on The Office.
That's exactly why. No. No, that's not right. No, actually what it is he is the director of the famous Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers, which had actually just come out prior to this. So he is doing Freddy's Nightmares after Halloween 4 has come out.
Most likely to pay gambling debts.
Follows that up with the 1989 Phantom of the Opera with Robert Englund.
Oh yeah, that was a Dwight Little.
Yes, it was. Does then Marked for Death with Steven Seagal.
Well, who wouldn't?
And follows that up with Rapid Fire with Brandon Lee.
Whoa.
So he was kicking ass at this point. Writer on this one is Michael DeLuca, who we've mentioned before. The reason I bring it up, though, on this time is because this is his first solo writing credit for the story.
Oh, you had, so it's just him on this
You one. Had Wes Craven for the character, of course, of Freddy, and Jeff Fraley for the creator of the series. But yeah, DeLuca, only solo writing story, or except for episode 17 coming later in a couple weeks. He was also solo writer on that. We're going to lose him, though, at the end of season one.
Yeah, because New Line's going to snap him up for bigger and better things.
That is correct.
Because DeLuca is one of the biggest Hollywood players there is now.
Yeah.
He was one of the main producers on 50 Shades of Grey and a bunch of other big blockbusters, but he got a lot of his humble beginnings
from the show. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm guessing that's how he showed, like, I'm guessing like producing or writing episodes of Freddy's Nightmares was like very similar to Bob Shea asking a friend to watch his dog for a weekend.
Yeah.
He'd be like, could you just go over there?
Just write this.
Like, I'll pay you. Not a lot,
but yeah,
but I'll make it worth your time.
Those two solo writing credits. Other than that, he's got a couple story credits and teleplay, but yeah, I saw this was his official story. So this is his episode.
So this is him being an artiste.
So Do Dreams Bleed? The episode opens with a close-up shot of a football soaring through a dark Springwood night as John Waring, played by Damon Martin, who comes to us from Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Ghoulies 2, and also he was in Amityville 1992.
My favorite Hold on. My favorite Amityville horror film from the original run.
Yes.
Is Amityville 1992.
It's about time.
One of my favorite things about Amityville 1992, It's About Time,
mm-hmm.
is that the artwork, when it came out,
said
Amityville 1992, It's About Time. And then when they were reissuing it, it was fun seeing how poorly they removed 1992 with Photoshop.
Yeah.
Like, they were struggling to get rid of it because they were like, why did we think this was a good idea to put the year we made it? So then it became just Amityville, It's About Time.
It's About Time.
And it's like, or Amityville Horror, whatever you want to call it. But I love Amityville 1982. It's directed by Tony Randell. Tony Randell, mm-hmm. you may know as the man behind Hellraiser 2 and Tix.
Yes.
And several other great
B-movies. Things.
He did a great job on that. Take my word for it. Check it out. I think it's on Shudder right now.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
and it might be on Tubi, too.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry. You brought up one of my favorite films.
I prepare for this when I do the notes, so it's fine.
Do you?
I do. So we meet John Waring dressed in full football attire trying to catch the football. He goes and makes the catch to the sounds of cheering, but something is off because the entire town is empty and foggy.
Now, I want to say...
Yes.
It's about time we got some real Springwood football action, because we've done track.
Yes.
We've done hockey.
Hockey, yes.
And for some reason, they have a hockey rink.
A big ass
about the size
rink.
Of a, you know, of a, like a small nation. It's pretty much Liechtenstein size. So it's about time we got into the jocking.
Yes.
The jocking.
The jocking.
Sure.
And can I say also that we're like right off the bat in dream aesthetic in this one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, and this one has a massive amount of that dream aesthetic, which is apparent in most episodes.
Yeah.
But I would say, like, the episode with the sorority sisters, was that Mother's Day?
That was last week, I think. Or the week before.
That one was great for the nightmare-ness.
Yeah.
Like, the all the dead girls standing around and the fog and everything. They're definitely hitting some really good notes.
No, they definitely are. And, like, the one thing I'll say about this episode before we get too deep into it is really, really nightmarish. Like, the entire episode is super nightmarish.
So that's your review of a Nightmare on Elm Street TV
that
series?
Entirely it.
Very nightmarish.
Very nightmarish. So he goes to make the catch. Suddenly he realizes that he's hearing the cheering, but he doesn't see anybody. And then he hears a loud thumping taking place. It almost sounds like somebody dribbling a basketball at first.
Yeah, no, it did.
It did.
Yeah. No,
so
I thought I'd have a joke, but I did not.
So he wanders down a flight of steps off to the side of the school, and he comes to see a figure with an axe striking a corpse multiple times. And John approaches the figure, and the figure takes off, leaving John to fall down the steps, landing next to a decapitated head.
Classic teenager dreaming about getting some head.
So he awakens then in his bed, revealing this all to be a dream, or was it?
Or, well, no, it was.
I mean, it was.
I mean, it was a dream about a real incident, but it was a dream
itself.
We'll get
there. We'll get there.
Okay, fine.
So next scene, John is in the kitchen when the phone rings. He answers the phone to the voice of his mother, who's played by Arlette Stella Poland. This is her only credit. Freddy's Nightmares is her only credit on IMDb.
Do you think she probably... I mean, it's possible that that's just her only credit, or she could have used a fake name. And somebody on IMDb didn't pick up on it.
Because
you got to remember, IMDb is run by a bunch of people who are criminally insane and have been dead for years. So
they did take away the message boards, too.
Thank God. Those message boards. Oh, man. Like, I would sit on the IMDb message boards and be like, I'm tired of this. I'm going to go ask some kids playing Xbox what they think of me. Just so I can feel a little bit better about myself.
Oh my God.
The first reviewer to ever say I should kill myself was on IMDb message boards.
I don't doubt that.
And it was like, I hate his Christmas movie so much. Director Henrik Kuto should kill himself. And I was like, all right, homie, I feel you. And I don't entirely disagree with you.
Oh my God.
But.
Wow.
It's a kid's movie, for Christ's sake. So anyway, but
so he's in the kitchen. The phone rings. It's his mom. And she is on vacation in Milan with his father. John tells her that
they're not together.
Well, not together.
They're going to meet.
They're
in
going
Greece.
To meet in Greece. Yes. Excuse me. They're having a great time. John tells her that the coach has sent some scouts out that are already looking at him and that he wishes they could be there to see him play. She comments it's their first vacation in 5 years and she misses him before hanging up. But might I mention that the whole time in this kitchen, what the hell was this blue color scheme?
It was really odd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it like, so.
And I want to point out.
Yeah.
I'm in Milan and then I'll meet your father in Greece.
Yeah.
I ask this almost every week. What do they do for a living?
Oh, we'll get there. We will get there because that comes back into play. So hangs up the phone. He's angry. We then get introduced to Ronnie, who is played by Sarah Buxton. She was in Less Than Zero, Nightmare Beach. She's actually the one in Nightmare Beach that has the headphones that gets zapped.
No way.
Yeah, it's her. And she also went on to be in Monsters, Walker, Texas Ranger, had a long run on Days of Our Lives, so she's still established to this day and acting.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
good,
so she plays
pretty good.
She is, yeah. She plays John's girlfriend, and she's been waiting at the back door this entire phone conversation in frame.
Well, and I want to say something about their relationship early on.
Yeah.
Of all of Freddy's Nightmares so far, they are the most realistic feeling couple,
yeah,
teenage couple, that's been depicted on the show,
no,
in my
I would
opinion.
Wholeheartedly agree with
because
that.
They are like always up each other's butts, figuratively,
yeah,
and then maybe literally.
bitch.
But no, my point is they're like glued to each other.
Yeah.
They both have kind of absentee parents, so they just spend all their time together.
Yeah.
And that's just such a, not a positive element of young love necessarily,
no,
but an accurate element of young love.
And because they're gone, he's got the house to himself.
Oh!
So, Ronnie asks, did she come at a bad time? John goes in telling her that, you know, it's always a bad time, basically, around here is what he says. She offers to comfort him, but he waves it off, telling her that it's not her problem, and the two leave and head to Springwood High School. And again, I say with this kitchen, they blend in with the kitchen at one point. Like,
yeah,
Ronnie is wearing blue.
The blue is bleeding so hard. The blue is bleeding so aggressively. And you also have to keep in mind, and I don't want to get overly technical, but the show was shot on 16mm film.
Yeah.
Maybe even 35, but I believe it was 16. I don't actually know exactly. I know it was shot on film.
Yeah.
But what we're watching was transferred to video in the 80s,
mm-hmm,
and then edited and colored and everything with the technology of then.
Yes.
So there's lots of detail lacking.
Yeah.
There's lots of moments where like reds are way too hot.
Yep.
Or in this case, the blues just take
they
over
bleed,
everything.
Yeah.
They bleed, but do dreams bleed?
But do dreams bleed? Let's find out.
Oh, no.
So we are at Springwood High School, which, man, we're getting so accustomed to going there.
It's weird. Yeah, I would have thought we'd be at the Springwood Chuck E. Cheese more often.
Who knew?
You know, but what?
So we're introduced to Coach Harris, which who's credited as Coach Gacy. He's never called Gacy the entire series. So then I looked on IMDb. That was an error. Like for some reason,
nice,
he has the credit of Gacy, but his name is Harris in the episode.
Well,
so Coach
I
Harris, played by Jeff McCarthy. He's known for RoboCop 2, Cliffhanger, recently in Joker. He played an anchor in Joker. He stops John to try and tell him a joke, which becomes like a theme throughout this episode.
Yeah, he's always trying to tell him a new joke.
Yeah. So he tries to tell him a joke, but John shuts him down. Harris then expresses concern with John and John reminds him that the chopper is out there. It's been 3 weeks and three victims. And then we find out that John found the last victim. So his death, the dream in the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah, that nightmare was about that. I want to point out that I'm surprised because the coach really seems to take an interest in Johnny.
Yeah, he does.
And I'm just impressed that a coach would try so hard to get to know his kids because of, you know, the turnaround at Springwood High.
I thought you were going somewhere different with that.
You did?
A little bit.
Okay, well, but now, Dave, Springwood has another killer.
Yes.
As you said, the Springwood Chopper, which really just sounds like a motorcycle dealership.
It really does. So the chopper, three victims in 3 weeks. John found the last victim, and he tells the coach this. Harris tells John that he doesn't want to talk about that, and he goes on to say that several of John's teachers expressed a concern, basically, with him, specifically his English teacher, and John says it's just one F, like it's not a big deal, and Harris goes, well, they still want to talk to your parents. He comments that they'll have to charter a plane and pack a big lunch. And to go find them, and argues that it was only one F in English. Harris realizes he's not getting anywhere with the kids, so he demands to know why he was late for practice. John then tells him that he'll explain everything tomorrow, and Harris comments, as long as John doesn't get arrested for murdering one of the faculty.
As long as you don't get arrested for murdering one of the faculty. It's like, wow, coach, read the room.
Yeah.
Like, that joke was in reference to only the trauma that Johnny has experienced. I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah.
Like you had an entire conversation. Like, imagine I had a conversation with you.
Yeah.
And one of the topics was both of my parents are dead.
Yeah.
But then the other topic where it was like cereal.
Mm-hmm.
And the other topic was like Netflix. And then I went with a tag about your dead parents. Instead of Lucky Charms.
So, John doesn't take kindly to that joke and walks off. Later that night, Ronnie lays on John's bed practicing the clarinet while John lifts weights in his room.
Yeah, he does.
John expresses that it was a tough practice, and Ronnie asks what she was talking to the coach about. John states it's no big deal, and Ronnie asks about his nightmares, in which he says he can handle a few bad dreams, reassuring her that if there was something, he would tell her.
And I want to point out that this show has truly taught me kids in the 80s loved having weight benches in their bedroom.
Their rooms.
Like, because I think this is at least the second time there's been a weight bench in someone's bedroom. Maybe the third.
Third, I think, actually.
Out of 11 episodes.
Yeah.
So kids these days, they just love the weight bench access, you know, right before bed.
And also, like, back it up for a second back to Coach Harris. I wrote in my notes that he is on Freddie's level because the way he talks to John in the locker room and like his hand movements and stuff, like there's a point where it's just like, dude, like I think you're almost drooling a little bit.
A smidge. And I do want to point out, you know, what like Ronnie, his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And I don't even want to talk about the fact that they're Ronnie and Johnny. Let's just leave that for the others to think about. But I want to point out, I like how she's like, you know, yeah, Johnny, you just seem so high strung for a guy who found a mutilated corpse and fell on a decapitated head a week ago.
Yeah.
Like, it was a week ago.
And then she comments at one point that she didn't even know about it. So so anyway, John reassures her that there's nothing going on, and he offers to walk her home, but Ronnie gets upset and walks off without him. On the back of John's door as they exit is a clipping about the chopper, which suddenly catches fire, splits, and we are presented with Freddy, who's in his domain, who says, "The chopper!
I hate cut-rate competition!"
And breaks an axe in half.
And I gotta say, I'm giving that one to Freddy.
That, one's
that was
bad.
A good one.
I just love the that way he says, one. The chopper!
The chopper! No, he's like such a condescending prick.
Really
oh,
is.
I have an axe! And he's just doing like a really offensive, effeminate thing with his arms. Ah, look at me! I chop up women at night!
We know for a fact that that outtake is out there somewhere.
It exists. I'm positive. I read about it on like, or I saw it on Justin Wang's channel, you know, looking for it.
So later that night, John wakes up at 2:15 a.m., which becomes the theme of the episode. He's alone in his room and he walks down to the dining room to the fridge and finds his parents sitting at the table. Obviously, he's surprised at their return, but they interrupt that they had to come back due to the F that John got in English. John argues it's only one F and everything else is all A's. They basically tell him that they're upset that he lied, and they walk towards the side door to a basement on the side of the kitchen, telling him there's something else he lied about that they want him to see.
Yes.
John is suddenly in a familiar boiler room area.
Familiar to us.
To us, yes. As his parents' voices echoes, "It's time to take your medicine." And as he wanders through a foggy room, suddenly a door opens as the real Chopper is revealed, who says, "Also, it's time to take your medicine."
And I just want to say, I love how Freddy finds your trauma and just plays it like a kazoo.
A freaking fiddle.
Like a kazoo. No, you know, I was going to say fiddle, but I needed an instrument with less dignity.
That's fair. Yeah. That's totally fair.
Bitch.
So he's hacking away at a body again. John panics and looks down then to see the dead bodies of his parents before waking up and screaming. And we are treated to a shot of the house outside. Did you recognize the house by chance?
I don't think I did.
He's living in Blocker's house from the first episode.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, and wasn't the Mother's Day kids living there too?
Not the mother. Well, they said it was, but that's not the same house. Now going back though, they did use that house in Sister's Keeper, of course.
Yes.
But yeah, no, it's Blocker's house from the outside. Oh. Because I don't think the house that was used in Mother's Day is the same house, because I don't think Blocker's house has a two-story on it.
I thought they said.
They said it was.
They said it. That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
No, we're not talking about what's real. We're talking about what Freddy's nightmares claims.
We're talking about what they tell us. Yeah, there we go. So John returns to Springwood High the next day and sits with Coach Harris, who's working on his office chair. Harris asks John what is going on again, and John gets defensive, asking why does he have an interest now. Harris explains that he's the golden boy at the school, so anything off slightly with him is going to draw attention, obviously.
Oh, yeah. And I just want to point out that during the scene, I mean, the coach is the Chopper. Like, it took one additional scene for me to pick up on that.
Yeah, no, like, it's pretty crazy to me this whole episode, like how much they just make it obvious and then we're supposed to be surprised.
But hold on, though, in defense of this episode,
okay,
I don't know if we were supposed to be fooled or if we were supposed to be hoping the characters would figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like how you have like a movie like Tremors versus a movie like a vampire movie.
Okay.
So when you watch a movie like Tremors, mm-hmm. you are learning the rules along with the characters in the film.
True.
But when you're watching a vampire movie, usually you know the rules.
Them, yeah.
And you're waiting for the people in the film to figure out the rules.
I didn't think about it that like that.
Yeah, so but I'm not saying either way, because
to
me, it did seem like they were trying not to show their hand, but they were also showing their hand poorly.
Yeah.
But, or they could have just played it both ways. It was like, hey, if you're really trusting, you know, the guy has a big forehead. That commands respect.
So Harris explains, like he said, that he's the golden boy, so any appearance is going to draw attention. John comments that it's his mistake and he should have been a screw up to avoid attention, to which Harris adds, like the Chopper, ? John asks why he brought that up again, and Harris tells John that Ronnie came to see him because she was concerned about the nightmares. John is angered again, but Harris tries to calm him down, asking him who knows about his dreams. John comments no one, because he doesn't have friends, he has fans, and he doesn't want his fans to know that he's a wuss by telling them about the nightmares.
And he doesn't have friends, he has family.
That's exactly what I thought too.
I want to say, you'd think, you know, the coach... You'd think you'd hear a student mention bad dreams and be slightly more concerned.
Yeah.
But whatever. It's totally normal for 4 out of 5 kids to die in their sleep.
The coach's obsession which we'll get to here in a second and also later, with just the identity of the identity of it in the dream is just like, so stop it. It's like, you're too obvious.
He just keeps, did you see more this time? Did you see his face? Is it getting clearer? Maybe you shouldn't be trying to see more in your dream, you know?
So John tells him the dream was worse last night, as this time the Chopper got his parents. Harris questions if John could see the Chopper's face, but John says he couldn't. The two sit in silence for a few before the bell rings, and Harris tells John to try and be on time tomorrow. As John leaves, Harris pulls out a scrapbook with Chopper newspaper clippings in it.
Yeah.
And not motorcycle clippings, the Chopper.
The Chopper. Not a bunch of pictures of hogs.
So John is back at his home with Ronnie, who is still expressing concern over John's issues and the Chopper dreams. John argues that she should have talked to him before going to Harris. Ronnie reaffirms that she just wants John to talk to her and that she didn't even know he'd found the last victim. So she didn't even know he'd found the
body. He had somehow kept it from her. She was probably like, I wondered why you were shivering and crying every night, but I just assumed it was a guy thing.
So frustrated, she walks off, leaving John in the house alone. John listens to the radio, which was one of my favorite things, as the news story comes on saying, saying, there's no news about the chopper or his whereabouts or his capture tonight.
We have no idea. We're all sitting ducks.
So he turns off the radio, picks up a phone, trying to put together words to call Ronnie. And before basically botching a few attempts, he just decides not to, and he gives up. Later that night, again, we cut to 2:15 a.m. John awakens and leaves his bed, wandering through the house, and hears Ronnie calling his name this time. He makes his way through the side door into the boiler room area again.
Wow.
As he hears Ronnie's voice echoes that he never lets her in, John apologizes to her but still can't find her until he sees the chopper appear again, stating, "You never talked to her anyway." Before chasing John back into his bedroom, where Ronnie is waiting in his jersey, asking if he knows what time it is, both are interrupted as the chopper hacks the door, stating, "It's time to take your medicine." And then we cut to a still image, mind you, a still image of Ronnie dead against the wall with the chopper's axe in her.
And I just want to point out, like, whoa, this is supposed to be on broadcast TV, and they just showed us his girlfriend's axe wound. I killed Dave.
Oh,
I did
man.
It. I did it. The goal always was thing. The death of David. So,
that's going to take me a second.
Oh, you're right there, pal?
That's going to take me a second.
That's okay. That's okay.
Oh, you bastard.
Oh.
All right. So the next morning, John is relieved to find that Ronnie is waiting at his back door. He tells her that he wanted to call her and apologizes. Ronnie embraces him with a hug as the two head out for school. Back at Springwood High, John is walking the halls with Coach Harris, telling him that his dreams are telling him that Ronnie is next.
Ooh.
The coach laughs it off at first before sitting down and listening to John's dream. Harris again asks about the face of the chopper and if he saw him.
Yeah.
John tells him only in a glimpse, it's never enough to make full sight of him. Harris explains that it's probably in his mind as he was upset with his parents, so he killed him in his dreams. He was upset with Ronnie, so she died in the dreams, and dreams can be very nasty in people's brains. Harris also tries to calm John down by stating the chopper is probably miles away from Springwood. And John says that he wants to see his face, and every time he tries to see a little bit more. Harris adds that he shouldn't try too hard because he might not like what he sees. John leaves, and Harris pulls out a student log with addresses and puts a red circle around John's address.
And I just want to say, I mean, he tells him, you might not like what you see. Like, what is the killer going to turn out to be Carrot Top or something? Like, what does that mean? You might not like what you see.
Why does the coach have a book of addresses for students, though?
I mean, because computers were expensive.
That's fair.
I also, at some point he made some joke and said, I'm sorry, I have a sick sense of humor.
Yeah.
Which I felt like you should just add like a murderer or something.
I'm sorry, I'm just a real chopper sometimes.
Oh, God. So now,
yeah.
I believe Johnny heads home, right?
Yeah, so John and Ronnie are back at his house, and John asks Ronnie to spend the night because he says he felt a lot better if she was with him, so that way he can keep an eye on her, and that he's not alone. Ronnie comments she would be safer at John's too before going off to call her mom. Later again that night, 2:15 rolls around as John exits the bed and goes down to the kitchen. He sees the side door appear again and states, not again, before approaching it and making his way down the steps again. The sounds of the chopper hacking away are echoing through the house as Ronnie comes downstairs to find John. She makes her way back up to the bedroom when she doesn't find him and calls his name, when suddenly the chopper appears in the door stating, it's time to take your medicine again.
Now, Johnny.
Yes.
His instinct when he sees access to the boiler room again.
Yeah.
Is to go down there.
Down
alone.
There. Alone.
And it made me realize, like, no wonder the coach worries about him, because if he can't play football, he's not getting into college. I'll tell you that much right now.
So suddenly the chopper appears in the doorway, and John goes to, John goes to wrestle with him, basically. Appears in the doorway, stating it's time to take medicine. Struggle ensues between the two. Ronnie flicks on the light then, revealing that Harris is on top of John, who's clutching an axe. And suddenly from downstairs, John Mothers calls, honey, we're back. John's parents then state that they are going to handle his committal as the two of them sit in the kitchen with Ronnie and Harris, which Harris comes in. How is Harris so involved in this kid, though?
I guess he was just so suspicious that he snuck into the bedroom window of a teenage boy. I mean, that checks out to me. I don't know what your problem is.
So they're sitting in the kitchen. Harris enters telling them that John's with the paramedics. Like I said, John's parents state they're going to handle his committal because they don't want anybody finding out that their son is the chopper. His parents question what brought Harris to their home, and Harris goes on to explain that Ronnie's phone call disturbed him, and he was worried John was breaking. Harris catches John as he's being wheeled out, and John questions, I'm the chopper? I'm crazy? go figure, before being wheeled out to the asylum.
Go figure is the best response to finding out you're insane you're I've killer. Ever heard. Go figure.
The A story ends as we cut to Freddy, who states, "Ah, the tender story of a boy and his axe." And that's
thank you. Thank you, Freddy. That. Yeah. Thanks so much, Freddy. You know, they really missed a prime opportunity when the axe was cutting down a door to say, like, "Hey, Johnny," or something. And they didn't. So I think we should riot.
Before we get to the B story, though, I want to just state that, like, as Henrik said earlier, like, this teacher is so obviously the chopper.
Hey, he's a coach.
He doesn't know things. And as we get into the B story now, I just have so many questions as to why he is so, allowed the involvement that he has with John.
Well, I mean, it's not like his parents are there.
That's fair.
So, but now we're about to head into the B story, as Dave pointed out. So I'm going to give you a quick breakdown in case you're new to Freddy's Nightmares. Very simply put, every episode has an A story and a B story. The B story is usually a little bit weaker than the A story, and it's never directly related. But it is.
It is, yeah.
But it isn't. Because in some markets, they only showed the first half of the episode.
Yeah.
But New Line couldn't resist getting hour-long time slots in other areas. So you have a show that has a bizarre delineation right in the middle.
Right in the middle.
Every episode. And now we're about to go into that. Usually, and this is no exception, the main character is a side character of that first one. Sometimes barely, but most times it's the co-star.
Yeah, it's usually the co-star. And with that in mind, if we're breaking this in half, what a really terrible ending for that first half of the episode, if that's the full episode that they got.
But it is a twist.
It is a twist.
I'm the chopper? Go figure. I'm insane? Go figure. I don't know. I think that's a pretty haunting one. I wish that I could have been sitting in my bedroom at night in 1988 and not be like 3 years old and watching this as it was happening. My buddy John Dalton was telling me about how he used to watch it in college and he'd fall asleep during it because it aired so late at night. And he told me legitimately, he was like, "I don't know if I remember anything about the show or if I imagined most of it because it was so weird." And I was like, "I think you remembered
it probably." So the B story begins as Ronnie stands in a red purplish lighting of a dark room playing the clarinet.
It's an oboe.
Oh, it's an oboe.
I am almost certain that's an oboe.
Okay.
Because it had a deep sound.
Yeah.
And when I was watching it, I literally Googled oboe to make sure that I was right. Because I have to say, finally, some goddamn oboe. That's something this show has been missing so desperately.
So she's playing an oboe as three dark figures appear behind her.
Whoa, David.
Stop it.
You don't have to, like, putting it that way.
Oh, gosh.
It's a little messed up.
Three figures in darkness.
In dark, okay. We'll allow it.
Appear behind her.
Write your complaint.
Bloodstained, and then a bloodstained John appears before her asking, "What's the matter, Ronnie? Out of tune? You should have known!
You should have known!"
And that makes us believe that the three people behind her are the victims of the chopper. So Ronnie is having nightmares. She's panicked and awakens in her bed to be consoled by her mother, telling her it's all right. Coach Harris is then seen at the asylum trying to talk to John, who he says has refused to speak since he got committed. And Harris comments he hasn't said a word since they brought him in, reminds him that he's the chopper and that he almost attacked Ronnie, but he stopped. John argues that he loved Ronnie and wouldn't hurt her. And Harris says one of my favorite lines. He says, "Some part of you hated her, the part with the big axe."
That's such a good line. And I like how this coach is like also a guidance counselor.
Yeah.
Also kind of an attorney.
And also allowed to be in an asylum with.
Well, it's not.
The hospital.
Well, but because I was going to say, remember.
Yeah.
He has not been charged.
No.
With anything. They've kept it quiet because they're a well-to-do family.
Yeah.
So. Of course he can visit a guy who's just in a hospital.
In a hospital, yeah. So he tells him that to get help, he has to admit that he's the problem and to call him if things become unclear again, to take his medicine.
Oh, yeah, take your medicine.
Ronnie leaves for school but is stopped by her mom, making sure she's up for it. Ronnie questions how John could hide these secrets from her without her seeing, and Ronnie's mom assures her that if she gets this job interview she's going to in Chicago and all goes well, it'll be a better turnout for both of them.
Well, hold on.
Yes.
What you really mean to say is her mom drops some wicked black pill bullshit on her. All men have secrets. It's just a matter of how bad they are.
So Ronnie,
like, her mom's seen some shit.
Oh,
Dave.
Yeah, no, definitely. So Ronnie begins walking, but notices that all the townspeople are looking at her with disgust.
It's all the neighborhood.
All the neighborhood, yeah, as she's walking. But then she realizes it's all in her head because she looks back to see that their attention is not on her at all.
Oh, but it was interesting to me. There were just like, there were no young people. Must be a coincidence.
Must be a coincidence.
Until she finds a little girl with the
roller
skate.
Yeah, so she comes across a little girl who's having issues with the roller skates and fixes it for her before the mother comes out scolding her for the girl talking to strangers and tells her that she shouldn't.
Now, for those who don't know, Double D and I, we're in Ohio.
Yes.
And Springwood is supposed to be in Ohio.
Yes, it is.
And they have not done a good job of depicting that at times. Read palm trees. But in the and that's not on Freddy's Nightmares, Dick. That's in the original Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
But I wanted to point out, this neighborhood she's walking in actually really looks Midwestern.
No, it does.
I think it must have been like the dead of fall or something.
Yeah.
Because it really looked like a Midwestern neighborhood. 100%. And not like a good one. Like an okay
like
one.
Like an okay like, one.
Like maybe about as good as my neighborhood, maybe a little worse. A little bit. I just want to point that out because as I was watching, I was like, well, that actually looks like they're in Wisconsin or something.
So back at the high school, Ronnie sits in Harris's office telling him that she's concerned that people know about John. He assures her that John's parents, her mom, and him are the only people that know because they kept it under wraps for his committal. Ronnie tells Harris about the dream of him and his victims, to which Harris asks, who does she think the killer is if it's not John? To which she replies, I don't know. It's just not John.
Who do you think it is? I don't know. Do you think it's me? What?
Huh? Who? Ronnie is back at home wishing her mother well as she leaves for the interview. She returns inside to start practicing the oboe again.
Of course she does.
Suddenly, an earthquake starts to shake the walls of the house, so she thinks, and Ronnie runs out of the room. The walls begin to crumble, exposing Freddy behind the wall, who states, her boyfriend misses her. He's in here, waiting.
I like that Freddy's a bit of a romantic. You got to remember, I mean, we've had episodes where Freddy just taught someone a lesson.
Yeah.
Which I'm still confused by.
Still confused by as well.
But
like,
most of the time he murders people.
The wall shakes and like she runs out of the room and then it like starts to drip or like peel away in blood. And then he's just on the other side in the garish lighting.
Yeah. Just, sup. Did you notice, by the way, so after that, he talks and we start seeing, I believe we go back to Ronnie in her bedroom.
Yeah.
Did you notice that the music almost, first of all, this episode, really good music.
Really good music. Yeah, no, I love the music in this.
It was really solid, but did you notice that some of it kind of reminded me of Back to the Future?
That, and I also had really strong Are You Afraid of the Dark vibes.
I didn't get that from the music, but I got that from everything
From everything else. Yeah, I get that.
For sure.
So later that night, John is having a nightmare again of the chopper, and this time he sees an axe being sharpened as well. John wakes up repeating the medicine line and then asks for more medicine as well.
Ooh.
Ronnie is asleep on her bed having a nightmare as the little roller skating girl enters, skating around her, singing "Ronnie and the Chopper sitting in a tree."
When you were a kid, are you so young that no one used to do that to make fun of people, or did they do that?
No, that happens still.
Oh, good,
that
I'm
still
glad.
Happened.
I just, it's not. I don't want bullying to go away. I just don't want it to change.
To change.
You know?
So the walls begin to shake again as Ronnie notices the infamous side door now appearing in her room to the boiler room. She makes her way down the steps to a big freezer, but also finds a bloody axe stuck on the floor as well. Suddenly, John appears and cranks the freezer side like it's a jack-in-the-box as three victims emerge again playing instruments. John looks at her and states, "What's wrong with this picture?"
What is with this show and Jack in the Boxes?
I don't know.
This is the second Jack in the Box foo that we've had in the series so far.
So,
and it's creepy, though. This one's really creepy.
Well, I loved this one because it was like the victims are like a music box.
Yeah.
And like they pop the top of it. But also the freezer's just like covered in like blood stains, it almost looks like.
Yeah, or at the very least,
rust.
Like heavy dirt and scratches and stuff like that.
So he asks, what's wrong with this picture? Ronnie awakens on the couch and suddenly makes her way to the wall asking John, what are you trying to tell me? Which is in like a close-up image of her at the wall.
I mean, it's a fair question.
It really is. So we cut back to John, who's being given his medicine by the nurse, but as she walks away, he pulls the pill out, tears it up, stating, time to take medicine, but not their medicine. Ronnie is then back in Harris's office trying to profess John's innocence and explaining the dream. She begs Harris to go see John again, to which he replies, "It's useless." She then screams for him to go see him again, please. Harris says he will, but advises Ronnie to let it go.
And I love the fact that... No, I don't love it. I want to know... I just want to know, Dave.
Yeah.
Why does everyone in Springwood feel like they can confide in evil Kevin Nealon?
Oh my God, I'm so happy you said that because I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, he looks like Kevin Nealon. Yeah, yeah. Evil Kevin Nealon is just like, tell me more.
Yeah, because he reminded me of it, the character where he has the double entendres where he keeps saying the things under his breath. I was waiting for chopper killer. What?
Yeah, chopper killer.
So Harris tells her to let it go, and basically Ronnie begs him. Harris leaves as the nurse brings more medicine into John. So he goes to see John, tells her that he is concerned because it's making Ronnie concerned that he's innocent and that he doesn't want to hurt Ronnie. Tells him that the chopper, it's the only way for her to begin and him to begin the road to recovery and to stop hurting Ronnie. So the nurse comes back in as Harris leaves and John takes the medicine. Ronnie is back home as the walls begin to shake again where the door was in the dream. Ronnie takes an empty glass up to the wall, putting it to try and hear something, if it's behind there or not. She then calls her mom, asking if the house has a basement. Her mom states, nope, it's just dirt and concrete down there.
I'm glad she asks her mom, like, are you sure we don't have a basement? Like, rack your brains, mom. Rack your brains.
So she tells her it's only dirt and concrete down there. We then cut back to John, who is leaving his bed at the hospital before it cuts to a shot of the chopper's axe being sharpened, leading us to believe that another murder might occur.
On Freddy's Nightmares?
Weird, right?
No. No. Hold on.
Bitch.
So the next morning, a disheveled Ronnie runs into Harris's office with an article showing that another chopper murder occurred through the night. So clearly John is innocent, which I've got to say, I thought this episode was about to go real dark and that was Ronnie was going to be the one that committed the murder to try and prove his innocence. Because she looks like disheveled and disturbed, like when she runs into his office.
That's a hell of a concept.
For a second, I thought that's where we were going. Unfortunately, Harris tells her that John actually escaped from the hospital last night and he and John's parents are the only ones who are notified. Harris urges her to stay with a friend tonight because she can't be alone, but Ronnie tells him that John was her only friend, so Harris then offers for her to stay with him.
Not a problem.
Not at all.
Quiet, Dave.
Luckily, she refuses and leaves. Ronnie then goes to John's parents, who have heard nothing from the police. She returns home and begins to hack at the wall, trying to find out if there's something coming from behind it and what it is. After making a hole in the wall, Ronnie lays on the couch and goes to sleep, but is awakened by the voice of John asking her to come down. He needs to show her something.
Which sounds on the up and up to
me. Yeah, clearly. Ronnie returns to the basement in fear as she sees the freezer again. She wanders over to a sheet and finds her mother under the sheet stating, they have something to hide, all of them, which is what she had said previously.
Black-pilled mama at it again.
So John then emerges as the chopper, dressed in his full football attire, mind you, with pantyhose on his head.
Well, did you notice the chopper wore shoulder pads?
Yes, he did, yeah.
And not like my mom did in the 90s. I mean, like football shoulder pads.
So John states, don't believe everything you read. After all, looks can be deceiving, before bringing the axe down, killing her mom, and laughing maniacally.
Well, I mean, how else are you supposed to laugh after doing that?
Ronnie wakes up, returns to her room, when suddenly an axe starts to burst through the door. Convinced she's still dreaming, Ronnie runs to her bed, calling for help and asking John to leave her alone. Suddenly, Harris emerges from the other side of the door with the axe, and John follows behind him, dressed in full football attire now, too, suddenly.
Well, yeah, it's his hero garb.
Follows right behind him as another struggle ensues. Harris falls on the axe, and John tries to reassure her that everything is okay now, and Harris was the chopper all along. John explains Harris was pressuring him to take the fall and said something that made John start to snap out of it, but he's okay now. Ronnie's in shock and won't embrace John as two cops enter the room, dragging him away. John tries to get Ronnie to vouch for him, but Ronnie says she doesn't know what she saw as John is taken away by the police.
Yeah.
The B story then ends as Freddy spins around.
Blindfolded.
He's blindfolded, feeling around his domain before pointing at the camera and laughing and saying, who says justice is blind? In Springwood, the innocent are always found guilty.
And I want to point out that we've had Freddy in chains.
Yes.
Now we have Freddy blindfolded. We're heading straight towards 50 Shades of Krueger territory. Like, we're right on that path. So I like, I don't know what Freddy's going for there, but boy, howdy.
Oh, we almost got out.
We were almost out. Hey, Freddy, how are you?
Not bad, bitch.
Hi, Freddy.
Hey, Freddy, I really like how you're dressed for the holiday.
What?
You know, the red and green sweater.
That's really funny.
It kind of hurt my feelings, but okay. Well, are you, like, are you here to do anything?
Yeah.
Do I have to do anything?
Well, you came down here. I would expect you have something to add. You know, we're covering season one, episode 11, Do Dreams Bleed, of your show, Freddy's Nightmares, currently.
I don't think that was me. I think that was Jason.
Oh, okay. That's sure. What?
Well, like, are you gonna make any puns?
No.
Really?
None?
Of course not. What am I? Some kind of hack?
We walked into that one.
Guess they... Guess these kids are victims of random acts of violence.
All right, that one was pretty good, Fred.
That's not bad.
Yeah, these are pretty good, Fred.
Thanks. I thought of them really late at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can tell.
We can tell.
Fuck you. What? What, Dave? Was that pun too hard to handle? Axes have handles.
That's
wow, Fred.
Yeah, that one's right on the tip.
Hey, you know, since we have Freddy.
Yeah.
Freddy, do you remember a holiday Freddy Krueger contest in Washington?
I never go to Washington.
No, Washington State, not D.C.
Oh, yeah, I'd go to Washington State.
Why wouldn't you go to Washington, D.C.?
Yeah.
It's like being a small fish in a big pond there, if you know what I... They rape children.
Who?
The global elite.
Okay, we're going to Freddy.
Oh, God, Freddy.
So follow me back to this holiday special. Follow me back to this holiday special. Do you remember, like, did you attend the party?
In the 80s, I did a lot of things I'm not proud of.
Yeah.
And that's saying something.
Yeah, that is.
No, that's... I'm getting really uncomfortable.
Same.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. Since I don't remember,
uh-huh.
How about... We do a celebration right now.
Oh, God.
Oh, I don't know about that, Freddy.
Yeah, what?
Hey, little boy. Welcome to the party.
Oh,
it's the holidays. What's your name?
Dave, he's talking to you.
Yeah, it's Dave.
How do you spell that?
D-A-V-E.
If you say so. Here you go. It's a VHS copy of... I'm going to need that. Give it back. Give it back right now.
You can't take it back.
Freddy, what? What is Boner Jams 87?
Oh, God.
Just, hey, here's a fun party hat for you.
Freddy, that is literally a pizza cutter.
Yes. And yes, no, it definitely. Freddy, what the hell?
Just calm down. Scalp wounds bleed a lot.
Ah.
Freddy, we just wanted to know. There were 50 winners of that contest. Did you at least have some fun holiday fun? Because we've never gotten, at least not so far, mm-hmm. maybe Freddy's Nightmares will give us some, but we've never gotten Freddy at the holidays.
No, we have not.
Jesus Christ. How about you just take the fillings out of my goddamn teeth?
Thanks, Freddy.
Bye, Freddy.
I'm gonna go now, okay?
Oh, jeez.
Freddy, away!
I don't know what just happened.
You know... When somebody thinks they're moonwalking, but they really aren't moonwalking, that's what Freddy just did. So,
can you take the pizza slicer out of my head, or should we leave
it? I'm going to pass on that. It's fine. Dave, honestly, it kind of suits you.
Who's Dave?
That's even better.
Oh, God.
So what are we going to give? What are we going to give Do Dreams Bleed?
Okay. So in retrospect of breaking this episode down... I think that it had some great qualities in regards to the presenting of the chopper scenes. I thought those were done really well. Like, the nightmare aesthetic is pretty top-notch in this. That said, the story falls apart a bit.
A little bit, and one thing I'm noticing on some of the more stretched episodes, is they rely on the insanity thing.
Yes. They did a lot of padding on this one because, like, the one thing we didn't mention with the roller skating girl going around her, that scene's in slow-mo.
Yeah, it takes a while to get through. I would say, in my opinion, I'm not going to say this is a bad episode, but it is probably in the range of my
one
least
of my
favorite.
Least. Yeah, same.
I'd probably give it, like, a flat C.
I was thinking a flat C or a C- if I wanted to be a dick.
So a C-.
C-. Yeah, I think I'm going to give this a C-, mainly just because, like, it was... When I was watching this, I had so many better ideas. Can I hate saying
wow.
that?
Wow.
I hate saying that.
Michael DeLuca. David DeNoyer over here wants to know how his ass tastes.
So send him an email
and let him know.
That's not what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
If you're telling me that we're going to watch an episode that's basically a slasher in Springwood, that should be fucking awesome. And it was fine.
Well, I mean, what are they supposed to be better than Freddy? Come on.
I mean, part of me was wondering, like, if there could be a cop show where just, like, Freddy got offended at the chopper, so he decides to start coming out.
Oh, my God. Krueger, this is the rule book, which clearly you've never read. Because all you do is kill all the perps in their dreams and they die for real. Okay.
That was my thought, though. I was like, I would much rather watch Freddy Detective, who's trying to figure out who the chopper is.
Freddy and Lacey?
Freddy and Lacey. Yeah. But yeah, I would say a C-. It's not a bad episode. It's just definitely one of the lesser ones we've come across so far. And Freddy's interactions are a bit weak.
He's the absolute least amount of Freddy, which is about four appearances.
Yep.
Is like the absolute least amount of Freddy by law, FDA standard, least amount of Freddy passable. So before we get out of here.
Yes, sir.
It's the holiday season. Christmas is coming up very soon.
Yes,
so we've been sharing our recommendations for Christmas horror you might want to enjoy. So Dave, what's your Christmas horror recommendation this week?
This week I am bringing one of the ones you and I discovered together before it broke big on Shudder, as well as got the Vinegar Syndrome release. Mm-hmm. We are talking about the 1989 film Deadly Games, a.k.a. Dial Code Santa Claus, a.k.a. Game Over, a.k.a. 3615 Code Para Noel. Directed by Rene Monzer, this movie is...
You forgot a.k.a. Dirt Dog, a.k.a. Big Baby Jesus, a.k.a. ODB.
So you'll find it mainly under the title Deadly Games. It is a batshit hybrid of, like, Home Alone meets... even know
like Rambo.
Rambo, yeah.
It's a French film.
French film. And it basically the story is you've got a kid who is obsessed with, like, action movies. He has a mother who runs a toy company, so he's got all this stuff set out through his mansion, lives with his grandfather, and a psycho Santa Claus somehow gets into the mansion one night, who is obsessed with Santa Claus but also just wants to...
No, he thinks he's playing Santa Claus for fun. It's one of the best killer Santas I've ever seen, because he's truly terrifying. And I won't give the spoiler, but there's a moment toward the end of the movie where you really realize just how insane
crazy he is. Yeah.
And that really hit me hard.
Yeah. And it's a balls to the wall. Like, it is, it's got some thrills, it's got some laughs, but more than anything, it has one of the most creepiest and craziest Christmas songs as the closing and opening credits too.
Was that
Happy Birthday Christmas.
Happy Birthday Christmas. So yeah, check that out. Deadly Games, highly recommended. It's on Shudder.
Yes.
It might be somewhere else. I don't know. I didn't do that much research.
I think it was still on Shudder.
But my suggestion is a newer film called Better Watch Out.
Yeah.
And Better Watch Out is about a kid who is a psychopath.
Entirely.
And he basically takes his babysitter hostage.
Mm-hmm.
And they start doing fun Christmassy things that end in murder, including one of my favorite moments I'm going to mention here, because it really tells you the kind of movie this is. He tests the Home Alone paint can thing.
Yes, he does.
And it is true. You would not live.
No, it is not. Henrik and I infamously started calling this movie the Funny Games Christmas Special.
It does not disappoint. If you need a bit of sick, twisted holiday fun, better watch out. Really underrated. I feel like it needs to land on maybe it has it ever been on Shudder. I don't know if it has.
I'm not sure it has. It was when it hit big. It got pulled or for distribution and whatnot. And it was basically under the title Safe Neighborhoods for a while too. Was the original title for it, and that's how a lot of people saw it at, like, Fantastic Fest and stuff like that. So it's been released under Better Watch Out. It's been out for, I would say, like, what, 3 years now? Maybe a little longer.
More of like five.
Yeah.
It's a really fun one and one of the most standout new Christmas horror films I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So highly recommend that.
Yeah.
And we have a little bit of extra time, Dave. Do you want to give another recommendation?
I would love to. So another one that I recently revisited is called All Through the House. It came out in 2015. And it is about a psycho Santa that is going through a neighborhood one night on Christmas Eve and killing people in various ways, which also includes...
Not various, actually.
Which also includes chopping off their dicks.
You know, an educated man might say castration.
Castration.
So chopping off dicks it is.
But it's an indie film put out by Gravitas. I watched it a couple nights ago. It's been a while since I revisited. You and I found it on Prime several years ago and completely won us over. Like, the best way I can describe it is by midpoint, it was in my Amazon cart. By the end credits, it was arriving at my house Tuesday.
That sounds like the proper chain of events.
Yes, it is a great little slasher.
Yeah, I like that movie and everything about it. I shouldn't have loved.
Yeah.
But it all worked great.
And it's got so much Christmas. Like, it is Christmas out the ass.
They just did a great job, and they definitely didn't have a lot of money.
No.
And they really did an awesome job.
Yeah, and it doesn't overstay its welcome. 95 minutes, you're out. It doesn't have really stupid dialogue by any means. The writing's really solid on it. And overall, when you find out what the story is, it works beautifully.
And I'm going to give one more recommendation before we get out of here.
Ooh, what you got?
I feel like this is a good use of our time since the holidays.
Exactly.
There is a film, speaking of films we discovered on Amazon Prime that blew our minds.
Yes.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
I know.
There's a film called Mercy Christmas.
I knew it.
Not Merry Christmas, Mercy Christmas. Not Merci.
Yeah.
Like French. No, Mercy. Like,
Mercy Christmas.
Like, please give some.
Give mercy.
Or, ow, have mercy.
Lord have mercy.
But, so, Mercy Christmas is one of the truly most demented, ultra low budget Christmas horror films of all time. It is, I cannot say it's not a horror film because it is so horrific and it bothers me a lot.
Yeah.
But the film is all about a very matter of fact level of masochism and cannibalism and family and the holidays. It is gruesome. There's torture, there's suffering. But most importantly, it is a fun and satisfying movie.
Yes.
And everybody in it is just kicking butt and taking names. That movie, possibly one of the most impressed films I've ever been with, in times I've ever been impressed with a movie I'd literally never heard of at all. And that also was put out by Gravitas.
Yes, it was.
And you can find it on various streaming services. Cannot recommend Mercy Christmas enough.
A great one.
But it is a, like, dark.
Oh, it's dark.
Dark movie.
Line up something light afterwards, even though the ending is so satisfying. It's definitely a ride.
Yeah, it's woof. It's so good. And if you're listening to this, if you're a person who's like, man, I need to listen to Freddy's Nightmares podcast every week, you're going to dig it.
Yeah, entirely.
So make sure to check that out and make sure you're celebrating your happy horror days because, you know, it's important.
And we got more coming for you next week. Not only are we going to be bringing more Christmas recommendations, but we're also going to be talking about season 1, episode 12, The End of the World, directed by Jonathan R. Boutel. And if you're wondering why that name sounds familiar, he directed not only My Science Project, but also Theodore Rex with Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh my. See, I thought Theodore Rex was just something I imagined while on NyQuil as a 7-year-old, but no, it's real.
So that is what we are covering next week, and I actually remembered it this week.
Well, you remembered to write it down.
Hey now.
Hey! All right, friends, we're going to get out of here until next week when we bring you another terrifying visit to Springwood, Ohio. Thank you so much for listening to Welcome to Prime Time. If you'd like to send us a message, reach out and cut someone. Email us at freddysnightmarespod@gmail.com. That's freddysnightmarespod@gmail.com. We love getting letters from you. We'll be back next week. Until then, pleasant dreams.
Later.